It's the 2019 legislative session wrap-up, a two-year state budget with education and DCS funding, that plus vaping, teacher firearm training, and more on Indiana Week in Review, the week ending April 26, 2019.
Indiana Week in Review is made possible by the supporters of Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations and by Ice Miller. Built on a 100-plus-year foundation of legal service, Ice Miller is a full-service law firm committed to helping clients stay ahead of a changing world. Working to develop an understanding of each client's needs to help build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.
This week, lawmakers finished the 2019 session by passing a new two-year state budget that includes what GOP leaders call a historic increase in K-12 education funding. Lawmakers are increasing the base amount schools receive for each student they enroll by about $350 per pupil over the biennium. But the state's $539 million total boost in tuition support won't reach every school because funding follows the student. So those dollars are also split between charter, voucher, and virtual charter schools. And the state estimates traditional public districts will receive about a 2% boost in funding each year, while charter and voucher schools receive a boost of up to 9 and 10% respectively. Democrats pushed back on the deal, saying it still doesn't include money for teacher raises. But one of the state's lead budget writers, Republican Representative Todd Houston, says school funding accounted for more than 70% of new money in the budget. Was the 2019 session a victory for teachers? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Jennifer Hollowell, John Schwanes, host of Indiana Lawmakers, and Nikki Kelly, Statehouse reporter for the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette. I'm Indiana Public Broadcasting State House reporter Brandon Smith. Ann Delaney, a lot of new money for schools. Is it now up to the locals to make it work for teachers?
Oh, for the locals losing money under this? What are they supposed to do? Plant the dollars they're getting and see if they'll grow? This is ridiculous, okay? We talked about the fact that teachers are underpaid in Indiana. We talked about the fact that they need a 15% raise. Traditional public schools are getting 2.06% increase. Okay, that barely, in most months last year, does not keep pace with inflation. So there is no new money to pay teachers. This not only wasn't what teachers wanted, it's a slap in the face. We've got 60 school districts actually losing money, and we've got school districts that are getting 1%. You can't do anything with that. Healthcare alone will eat up those costs. So we're not talking about increasing teacher education, teacher funding at all. And the irony of this is again one of the big things that the governor was talking about. He was going to take care of teacher, or he's going to start at least to fund education sufficiently to pay teachers a living wage, and we're not doing that.
The conversation around teacher pay, a lot of the session has felt like the balance between what the state needs to do and then what locals need to do to make sure that teachers are adequately paid. Has the state done its part?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So it's an historic amount of investment and increase in education funding. $763 million in new funding for K-12 education over the next 2 years. It also, they took steps to drive those dollars to the classroom. The decision for teacher pay is left up to the locals, and as it should be, there shouldn't be some sort of a statewide base set for what teacher salaries are because different communities have different needs, and those school districts can make the decision about what they need to be competitive, right? It's different in a rural place than in a suburban community. And also what kind of staffing they need. Maybe they want to put those dollars, they need additional teachers or they need counselors, they need something different. So it allows school districts to make those decisions
on their own. It doesn't do that at all, Jennifer.
Absolutely,
it doesn't do that
at
all.
They also increase
funding
for teachers, for effective and highly effective teachers, the teacher appreciation grants, increased by $7 million. All the way down the board, there's increases in K-12 education. And a testament to that, I would say, is the fact that at this announcement, you had five or six of the state school-related associations standing up in support of
it. Hold
on.
You didn't have a coalition of school business officials and school leadership organizations that you don't normally see together in one place all together on the same issue. But you didn't see any teachers' union representatives there. Is that tell the tale of the tape?
Sure. I mean, there is no doubt that the General Assembly responds to pressure. Surprise, surprise. Not always pressure that takes the form of a large rally, but it could be constituent pressure from actual constituents in actual districts making personal contact. Obviously, we're not privy to what conversations did or didn't take place. I think there generally was pressure. There generally was a consensus. If there was one issue heading into this session where everybody seemed to be in agreement, in fact, the governor was sort of the outlier early on because you had Republicans and Democrats in both the House and Senate all making teacher compensation sort of job one. And the governor, now he got there eventually, but he was a little bit later arrival. So I don't know what additional pressure would have done.
Teachers need to go out on strike. That's what.
Well, but they can't. Some of them have contracts that say
some of them do, and then maybe they need to do it anyway.
Maybe a blue flu or whatever the teacher equivalent of a blue flu is. But one thing I would note is I've been paying attention to the post-session spin from the majority parties in every budget session back to 1988, probably. I paid attention even as a child, is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
And every budget has been described as it relates to education as historic.
Historic.
I think I'd be hard-pressed to find one that didn't.
The reality, though, here is that the conversation isn't over, even in the short-term budget cycle, because teachers weren't going to see a paycheck, you know, increase tomorrow because of this budget. It's going to be down the line anyway. So
most of them already have contracts that are in place for this year, even sometimes next year. So it's not something that was going to be an immediate thing. I do think it's interesting. Look, there's no denying that they gave them a lot more money than they have in the last couple of budgets. But I do think Republicans need to be a little more cognizant about, you know, as Ann pointed out, the traditional public schools. Just through the tuition support formula, not including the TAG grants or things like that, you know, it's 2%, whereas charter is getting 10%, you know,
virtual ed, voucher's
getting 9%.
Right.
And I realized that to move the overall tuition support number to, you know, go up 1% is a huge amount of money. Whereas when you're talking about the smaller amounts,
it's easier to make those bigger leaps.
But it looks bad, you know, when you see, you know, private schools getting larger increases in percentage than public schools.
And when you realize that that's 7% of the school population in all three of those categories, and 93% of the school population is getting the short shift, that's the problem.
All right, well, time now for viewer feedback. Each week we pose an unscientific online poll question in conjunction with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question, was the 2019 legislative session a victory for Hoosier teachers? A yes, B no, or C it is too soon to tell. Last week's question, will Pete Buttigieg beat the Democratic nominee for president in 2020? 17% of you say yes, 37% say no, and 46% say it's too early to tell. If you'd like to take part in the poll, go to wfyi.org/IWIR and look for the poll. The Indiana Department of Child Services won't get as much money as it initially wanted in the new two-year state budget.
DCS asked lawmakers for $286 million more dollars per year than it got in the last budget. That matched one-time funds shifted to the agency over the last year to deal with a significant influx of children in the welfare system. But Republican legislative leaders say there's been significant progress at the agency, and the new state budget will boost DCS funding by $256 million in the first year and $246 million in the second. Lawmakers also insist the governor can use the state's budget reserves if the Child Welfare Agency needs another emergency influx of funds.
Jennifer Hollowell, there is no doubt that the metrics say things are getting better at the agency. Everyone agrees with that. But are we just, it's only for a few months, are we tempting fate with this budget?
No, I don't think so. I think this is a responsible position where we are. And first of all, it's based on data, right? And so we have seen since the new director came in, a year and a half ago or a little over a year ago, we have seen real meaningful progress. And turnover is down like 20%. The caseload ratios are better. The number of children who are in out-of-home care is down double digits. All of these numbers, almost all of them, what you want to see going down, are going down double digits. And so we're making real progress. This appropriation is, by the way, $500 million more than what it used to be, the baseline. And so that's a significant investment. And it's not that far off of what the request was. And ultimately, there is a backstop, right? Like last year when the situation arose, or in 2017, the governor made an emergency appropriation. And he still can do that if we find that we need to.
And is that the most important thing here, is that if it needs to be there, the money will be there?
Yeah, but you have to ask, you know, when I hear Republicans talk, it's always that we have to run this as a business. Okay, fine. In a business model like this, where we had to have an influx of $500 million to get these numbers under control, it worked. And that's good, okay? So what's the first response? Do we stay the course? No. We cut $30 million here, and then we cut another $10 million for $40 million the next budget, the next year of the budget. I mean, what's wrong with, when it works, following it? I mean, why do we have to find cuts when putting that money in there has meant a difference to the safety of children? It seems to me we would do it for a period of time, and then hopefully the need might not be there in another 3 or 4 or 5 years, but certainly after this short a time, it's still going to be there.
So Jennifer talked about the backstop, and obviously it's there, and Republican legislative leaders said if the governor needs the money, he has the authority, as the governor's had for a decade now, to move the money. But if they have to do that, doesn't it look like, once again, the legislature didn't do what it needed to do?
Yeah, I mean, people that I spoke to kind of saw this as sort of an unnecessary gamble, right? We were above the $2 billion, the magic $2 billion surplus. You know, so I don't really understand the reason for not putting the $30 million in the first year or the $40 million in the second year. You know what? If it turns out great over the 2 years, you revert that money and you claim victory. But in the meantime, you've kind of set yourself up for some obvious criticism. And I agree, the sort of parallel or the irony of, here's a bunch of money to improve it. Oh, you improved it? Done.
Well,
taking
take
it away.
We talk a lot about what they're risking here, but the numbers have been getting better for it's a steady decline in the metrics where you want to see decline. Plus, this isn't also happening in a vacuum, where they passed three pieces of major legislation dealing with the agency and child welfare that are aimed at continue that improvement in the agency. So if it is an unnecessary gamble, will it pay off?
Well, what's the payoff? I've always said this is a game you only can lose. Nobody's ever going to win and say unless we stamp out all child neglect and bad parenting and bad economic circumstances for time in perpetuity. That's not going to happen. So this is a test that the state can only fail. Okay, that's the starting point. So then we do live in an era of reversions. We've seen that. So arguably, to the extent that you could declare victory with any sort of news conference or bring out the easel and say, look what we've done, they're probably the best opportunity from a PR standpoint would be with a reversion and say, because now it's forgotten, unless the only way it comes back up is if they need to dip in to the reserves.
Yeah.
And that's, I guess there's lots of strained metaphors I could bring up. But again, think of, for you, it won't be sports though, don't worry, I'm going to have to take deference to you there. It's a vaccination, childhood vaccination program. Guess what? If you throw a lot of money at it, you can probably bring down, you know, exposure to disease and disease rates. You don't stop though. I mean,
this budget does stop. We cut it.
Yeah, that's actually one thing that was cut from this budget.
Well, I didn't. Yeah. Okay, so it's more than a metaphor. Yeah. It's more than it's accurate.
All right. Well, a bill to impose a tax on the liquids used in e-cigarettes couldn't make it to the finish line as the 2019 legislative session ended.
Lawmakers considered options that included a 10% tax or a 5% levy on vaping liquids that contain nicotine, but no agreement could be reached before the General Assembly adjourned. House Speaker Brian Bosma expressed disappointment in the result. U.S. Surgeon General Jerome Adams, former Indiana Health Commissioner, has called vaping among teens an epidemic, and data suggests young people who vape are more likely to move on to traditional cigarettes. Indiana Chamber of Commerce President Kevin Briniger said the General Assembly failed to address that issue or the state's increasingly worse smoking rate.
Dr. Box and stuff. But. Well, John Schwanes, did Indiana lawmakers miss an opportunity here?
I guess in a way, you look at, when you talk about framing opportunities, it's what constituency is for something or against something. And you would have to assume that the constituency that is, you know, adamant and zealous about preserving vaping rights and tax, the current tax status, is relatively small. It's sort of like doing things to inmates. You know, there's not a lot of political risk to certain constituencies. I'm surprised it was something wasn't done on this front. You know, I thought there was a difference between this and, for instance, tobacco, only because of the tradition of our state as in our culture, you know, 200 years of background about what's socially acceptable and what's not.
But was this more, I mean, this wasn't the simple, should we raise the tax on cigarettes?
I had learned so much about this topic. It's very complicated. You know, do you tax on the liquid? Do you tax on the sales price? Who collects it? You know, retail level, manufacturing level. So there are a lot of details that were confusing. Only about 12 states do this, and they are all over the board in how they do it. Now, having said that, I think the biggest problem with it is I couldn't really figure out why we were talking about it. Like, in other words, some people thought we needed a big tax to deter youth smoking, youth vaping, which leads to smoking. Other people were like, well, we just need to tax it because we tax this other product, so we need to have parity. And so I think they need to figure out why before they're going to succeed.
Yeah, is this one of those issues that could really use more study before we do something?
It might need a little bit more study, but we need to do something because nicotine's addictive, and nicotine is in these e-cigarettes. If they want to just smoke,
specifically the proposals they debated was only the ones
nicotine.
That have nicotine.
That's right. If they want to do it with pineapple flavored whatever, I don't care. But on the nicotine front, we're addicting tens of thousands of young people. And we can't raise the cigarette tax because the right wing of the Republican Party won't raise any taxes at all under any circumstances.
Except for the road taxes.
Except
for
road taxes, that's true. Except when, even when it makes sense to raise them, which it does for both cigarettes and to tax the nicotine component of this. Yeah, we can study it, but we can also do it. And it seems to me we ought to do it before we have a new wave of young people smoking and addicted to nicotine.
There have been a lot of efforts by, including the Indiana Chamber of Commerce, big businesses, to do a lot of stuff around smoking, vaping and smoking. At some point, does the Indiana General Assembly just have to do something?
They would probably say no.
Clearly.
I mean, if we look at Sunday sales, we can wait, you know,
another 20,
maybe 100
years
or so.
Yeah,
but
true.
I think that, number one, it is complicated in all the ways that Nikki described. And so I think a lot of legislators learned a lot through this session. And my guess is they're going to come back with some sort of a plan next year. You think about how many times they've tried to raise the cigarette tax, and that hasn't happened yet. This is a lot more complicated in figuring out who pays and or is it on milliliters or what is it on. So there just wasn't consensus, but I do expect that we will see this again.
Yeah. Well, legislation that would have funded specialized teacher firearm training died as lawmakers adjourned for 2019.
The sticking point for lawmakers? A provision that would have made the firearm training a requirement for school districts that chose to arm teachers. When originally written, the bill provided state funding for an optional 39.5-hour teacher firearm training. A handful of Indiana school districts already have chosen to give staff access to firearms and provide training. In the Senate, the bill was amended to include a mandated personality test and require staff consent for active shooter training with projectiles. The legislation was never called back down on the floor in either chamber before session's end.
Nikki Kelly, how did this unfold at the end of session?
Well, to be fair, the sticking point was with one lawmaker. It was Representative Lucas, the author of the bill. He did not like that requirement for gun training. He sees it as a slippery slope to, well, if we're going to require teachers to get training, then, you know, next thing you know, we'll require Hoosiers, you know, of all ilk to get training. The Senate obviously had embraced it, and I know there were more than enough votes if you counted the Democrats to get it passed in the House, but in the end it was his bill and he was not having it.
So instead of Lucas's original proposal was optional training or funding for training.
Yeah.
Instead we have nothing. Is that a failure?
Oh boy. Well, who's to say? I mean, that's if you're on one side of the issue, it's a great victory. If you're on the other side of the issue, it's an abysmal failure. Keep in mind the author of the bill, Jim Lucas, that we're talking about, basically was looking to help pay for training for teachers who wanted to do it.
Yeah.
And I don't think it was so much safety enhancement as it was, gee, if you want to do this and become more a better shot, more adept, you know, we don't want you to have to dip into your wallets and purses to do it, we'll help you. And then when that became, we have minimum standards here for training, that's when that's not what I was bargaining for. And, of course, we know that the author has the ability to
be trained. God forbid they should be trained.
Is this another one of those issues that comes back?
I think it does, yeah, I do. Because the way it all ended up at the end, I do think that it'll come back. I do think it's reasonable to say if we're going to allow teachers to carry in schools, which state law already does. Some people, I think, didn't understand that already is allowed
for districts to decide
with no training requirements. Yeah. Then, you know, I think we probably should make sure that there's some training. And the goal really was to be able to use some of the school safety funds to pay for that training, which is reasonable. I don't think it would be very much money either. So I expect it comes back.
Is it a safe bet that if it comes back, Jim Lucas won't be its author next time?
I would hope so, because, I mean, the idea that you're allowing people to carry guns in school situations without training is incredible to me. It really is. And I frankly thought that Jim Lucas was sponsoring this because he thought the NRA would offer it and it would be a way to help, you know, help them make a little money. They're in financial trouble these days, so I thought that's what it was all about. But when
the 70,000 people downtown,
there may be,
but
apparently they can spend faster than they can bring it in. So they've got some.
Keep
difficult.
In mind the context. He's an advocate, Jim Lucas, of constitutional carry, as it's right. called. They call, which is no training, no licensure.
Yeah, that's true.
That's so. I mean, anything short of that would be a violation of his stance. I mean,
oh, okay, that's great. So, right. so
well,
you know,
I'm just
all right. Moving on, lawmakers approved what one legislator called a monumental shift to Indiana's gambling industry this week.
The biggest changes to the gaming industry: a Gary casino can move to a better location in the city, subject to a $20 million payment. If that happens, a Terre Haute casino can open, though Vigo County residents must approve a public referendum to allow that. Proponents say the bill makes important changes for the state's third largest revenue source. The measure also legalizes sports wagering statewide, including online and mobile betting, which critics say goes too far.
Aunt Delaney, is this going to be a net positive for Hoosiers?
You know, I found it interesting that the person, that the representative who spoke to this bill,
Todd Houston
voted against this bill.
Yes, he did.
You know, as my husband said, whoever negotiated this deal ought to be fired. When we started out talking about them paying $100 million for parts of this, and we wound up paying them $20 million, which is what we're doing, because they're paying $20 and we're giving them a $40 million tax credit, not a deduction, but a credit. So that's $20 million to them. I mean, who would negotiate something like this?
I don't think they're getting that $40 million credit.
Well, it's not
they are.
It's a credit, but they're getting tax benefits that would amount
well
to
they got a better deal than they would have.
Right.
Yeah.
I'll ask you the same question. Is this a net positive for Hoosiers?
It definitely is, because we're going to see an increase in revenue. And we're already in the gaming business. Like, I think that discussion is done and over with.
So this is an expansion, and it's
okay. What this is we are allowing our casinos to be more competitive with out-of-state, which is going to be good for revenue. And we're kind of modifying and improving the way we're regulating and taxing them. And I do want to say, though, I think that you're wrong. I don't think it went from 100 to 20. I think it went from zero.
Yeah, because the Senate version of the bill didn't have anything.
Well, the other version had 100.
Yes, that's true. Well, finally, as we wrap up the 2019 legislative session, who are its winners and losers? Let's start with winners. I'll start with you, Aunt Delaney.
Oh, I think the winners are the entities that operate the virtual schools and the private schools in the state, because their funding is, in some cases, 5 or 10 times higher than traditional public schools.
Jennifer Hollowell, who's your winner?
K-12 education getting $763 million more.
Quickly, John
Schwartz. Gaming industry, I'll believe it there.
The gaming industry in general, except for those Southeast Indiana
casinos.
I'm going to go with Todd Houston, because he took on the budget with not much notice. Gaming and CIB got them all done.
That's true. All right, so quickly then, who are your losers, Ann?
Indiana teachers, no question.
Whoever wants to run against Governor Holcomb.
How about redistricting advocates?
On the Republican side?
Redistricting him.
Either.
Remember that issue?
Democrats, just because they appear to be shut out of pretty much all discussions.
That's what happens with supermajorities.
Well, that's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Jennifer Hollowell, John Schwanis of Indiana Lawmakers, and Nikki Kelly of the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at wfyi.org/iwir, or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity and on the WFYI app. I'm Brandon Smith of Indiana Public Broadcasting. Join us next time, because a lot can happen in an Indiana week.
Indiana Week in Review is made possible by the supporters of Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations and by Ice Miller, built on a 100-plus-year foundation of legal service. Ice Miller is a full-service law firm committed to helping clients stay ahead of a changing world, working to develop an understanding of each client's needs to help build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com. The opinions expressed are solely those of the panelists. Indiana Week in Review is a WFYI production in association with Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations.